He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning or hello to our listeners for this week's version of Car Keys with Jay DeMark and Robin Leach. Jay is going to give us a report from Lime Rock, which is where he is as of this show's taping. And I want to start out by saying that we are rapidly finishing the summer season, which means we will be heading into fall and then winter, of course. And I want to start out by suggesting some comments for people to start checking their cars and various area departments in prepping their cars, your cars, listeners, for this coming winter season. There are three areas, maybe there are more, Jay can add in, that I think you should be thinking about looking at on your cars as you head towards the snow season. The first one is tires. We talk on this show periodically about tires and tread wear and tread depth and other things that affect cars' performance on the road, depending on what condition your tires are in. In the wintertime, when you have the chance of snowfall, you really want to know that you have tires that can grip through the snow and reach the pavement with some form of traction. And tires with very little tread life left are not the answer to that. So you should take a walk around your car and check each of the four corners for the tire tread depth situation. Normally they would be about the same if your tires are in good condition and your car has been in good alignment and has not caused tires to wear unevenly. But maybe you put on two tires in the front and you didn't put two tires in the back, and you may find that there is some marked difference in tread depth. So the more tread depth you have, the better for winter season driving. The next area, of course, is being...
Hold on with the
okay,
tires.
Jay, comment, go ahead.
Well, I think the obvious, it's always the obvious about tires. I mean, if you can put snow tires on the car, you're better off. And or else, obviously, you know, all seasons tires are reasonably adequate. But, you know, all-wheel drive doesn't negate the advantage of a full-blown snow tire. If you have summer tires, you do have to be careful, and that's all I'm going to say about tires. Some summer tires, like I put on my little sports car, are not meant to operate under certain temperatures, which is around 40 degrees, I believe, Fahrenheit. So there is that little issue with summer tires, but you should not be running summer tires in the winter anyway. So that's all I have to say about tires for now.
All good additions to what I started out with for you listeners. So just be very observational on your tire condition, what type of tires you may be running on your cars. And if you've got the money to afford a separate set of snow tires, only tread wear, that's a good thing to be able to do. But then I'd like some of you listeners, if you're listening and you happen to put studded snow tires on. Take them off in the summer. Stop clattering around our asphalt roads, as I hear often, once the snow is gone, because they do damage to the roads, and they are a wasted wear factor for those tires to be used in the next winter season. Next, I was going to go before Jay supplemented my comments on the tire situation, is be sure that your windshield washer system is working properly and that you have filled your windshield washer bottles, which are normally under the front hood of most cars, if not all cars, with proper antifreeze protection windshield washer fluid. Now, that is not the antifreeze you put in your radiator in your car, so don't dump that stuff into your windshield washer bottle, because that will not do a great job of clearing windshield. But you do want to be sure that A, your bottle is full of minus 20 or minus 25 degree below protection, because even sometimes the lines between the bottle and the windshield washers where they come out can freeze, even with this with this protection feature in the windshield washer fluid. I guess that's those are the two main areas. Windshield wiper blades. You want to have windshield wiper blades that are not streaking when they go on when the windshield gets wet. You should always, if your car is parked outside and there's a big frost factor on your windshield when you start up, be careful, but please take each of the windshield wipers on your front windshield carefully in your hand and sort of peel it off the windshield before you have to turn your windshield wipers on if you do so before they have thawed from being frozen to the windshield. That plus good windshield wiper blades are probably the final area, unless Jay has something else along those lines to add to this particular topic. We will then move on.
And turn your wipers off. We're getting way ahead here. I mean, it's winter. Nah, I was going to say.
It's good.
We're going to forget this. Turn your wipers off in winter if you're going to leave your wipers on the windshield. Because when you restart the car and the wipers are stuck to the windshield, it is not good for the electric motor.
The other thing is, if you can lift your blades off, and some hoods do not allow this to happen, and put them in an upward position, vertical to the windshield overnight, that's another good idea to keep your wiper blades from freezing to the windshield.
Let's talk about a few more summer things and events. I mean, it's still nice out, and we have a few more weeks of good weather. So, I don't know. You mentioned it. I was here at Lime Rock Park, and Lime Rock is part of this historic festival that happens every year in our area, and it is the opportunity. I think it's the best opportunity for car enthusiasts to see up close some very, very interesting, sometimes very valuable cars. And this all starts out, we had talked about it, I think, a couple of weeks ago, the Thursday parade that happened, this past week, between Lime Rock, Salisbury, Lakeville, and ending in Falls Village. And for those of you people who have never been to the Falls Village, I call it a cocktail party in the center of town where all the cars meet at the end of the parade. It's just a fabulous gathering of very beautiful cars of all ages. And it's not just the cars, it's the people and the stories. And it's fascinating. And it's amazing how many car people and cars we have just in this area. It's truly incredible. And Robin, you could don't you have old cars? You should showcase one car too.
Well, you know, it's nice that you report from it, as which is being done as we have taping this show, so it will be too late for listeners to go this year. But this is something that car enthusiasts should put on their calendar every year, and we will likely bring it up periodically in the future as we get closer to next year's event. But it's supplemented by the Falls Village event too, which is also a place where you can see a lot of older cars that have been restored, and fills the streets of the town of Canaan, which is technically, we call it Falls Village, once or twice a year. Jay, is it once a year?
There is a car show in July.
And has already occurred.
Yeah, there's a car show, I think it's in July, that I've missed every year. That's pretty good too. That's also in Falls Village. I think the type of cars are very different, but again, I have not been to the Falls Village car show, and the one in the summer. I can only attest to what was there this weekend, and there was a car show here at the track yesterday, and some of the cars are the same. There were probably a lot more cars here yesterday. I know the local roads were jammed early yesterday morning, and that went on through part of the morning. We had, I don't know how many hundred troopers for the NASCAR event. And then here, I don't know what happened, but there was a bit of a mess around the roads here on 112. But I was already here, so it's only hearsay.
Far, far, You know, good. For our listeners' interest, because we keep referring to yesterday and the day before, our shows are taped weekly on Mondays. So you can do the figuration when we say yesterday was a Sunday in this event. I want to talk
about the cars themselves. And, you know, I think we, this is me personally, I have, you know, the cars that are of interest to me are the cars that I looked at when I was a kid. So I'm partial to the cars of the 60s and 70s and even 80s. And now we see cars from the 90s making it to, you know, Historic Festival. And I'm going, wait a minute, those are not old cars. But then again, yes, they are. You know, 30, 40-year-old cars are vintage cars. And there's a great collection of Triumphs here. There's a huge contingent of racing Porsches, air-cooled 911s.
Announcements that have been in the news as we've been arriving towards September 30th, which is the date that the $7,500 national tax credit ends for any cars, electric car purchases that have not occurred before September 30th of this year. So if anybody is listening and they're planning, you're planning on getting an electric car and you want the tax credits, you better have it done by September 30th. That's just a minor announcement as part of our show.
Not really minor. $7,500 is not minor.
Well, $7,500 is not minor, but it is a date that is coming fast as we head into the fall. A couple of other things. One of the things I was reading in one of my periodicals was what car makers try to do to enhance car sales. And Stellantis, I don't know. I didn't know that this was possible. Stellantis produces, which is Chrysler, Jeep, and all that, Dodge, has a Durango model out, and they've got something called a SRT Hellcat Jailbreak version of the Durango, which is a big, sort of mid-sized crossover, I guess. The headline I'm reading here is, the 2026 Dodge Durango, which has yet to hit the dealer's lots, I think, is getting a customizable jailbreak edition that allows for more than 6 million combinations of features, such as color options for brake calipers, badging, seat belts, wheels, and who knows what else to make up more than 6 million options available. I don't even know how you could design a vehicle that would have 6 million options available. It's a mind-boggling number. It's designed to help enhance the sales of a vehicle whose sales have been diminishing, but the vehicle is not disappearing. Jay,
let me barge into this. Yeah. I think it's totally ridiculous. First of all, I think it's not 6 million options. It's 6 million permutations, so combination
correct.
Of options.
That is correct.
So, you know, we're not here to do math, but you know, that, you know, yes. Okay. 6 million permutations. So you can get green calipers and yellow seat belts or whatever. Here's the thing. We sell cars in this country, dealers buy cars, months in advance. So dealers are stocking cars. So the dealers are going to be spec ordering these vehicles, and you're still going to walk on the lots and buying whatever the dealer has. Nobody is spec ordering a Dodge Durango in any foreseeable future. And I just think it's ridiculous. And I think Stellantis is...
And any other manufacturer that tries this I agree with you, Jay. Ridiculous. I wouldn't even think about wondering what my brake calipers should, could, or I'd want them to be what color.
I have no problems with the ability to order cars, but that then needs to be a sales model. And so, yeah, make it that you can order a car. If you, the extreme opposite is Porsche, where you actually do spec order cars and you go down the list of options. And I've tried to do it just for argument's sake, even though I'm not in a market for a new Porsche. You can't just do it in one session. It takes hours and hours to go down the list. And it's tedious, and it gets really irritating because you kind of forget what you started, the boxes you started ticking. But again, if the business model is to sell cars by allocating, you know, reservations, and then you can spec order your own car, great. But American car manufacturers and the sales model in this country has never been about that. It's been about putting inventory on lots and letting people walk the lots and walk out with whatever was shoved down their throat. And I'm being a little harsh here, but that's the way I see it.
That's harsh enough. Stellantis is also revitalizing the Charger, I believe it is the Charger, with a gasoline-powered version of the next generation Charger. But they're omitting a very big option, at least in the beginning, which is that of the Hemi V8, and they're trying to do it with the six-cylinder versions going forward. Jay, I'm not sure. Does Charger come in an electric version now? But the interesting thing is that they're bringing back a gasoline, or they're enhancing a gasoline version of the next generation Charger, as opposed to continuing to try to make this push towards electrifying this particular car, as well as other electric cars, which is also being postponed by other manufacturers too, as we go towards 2030.
I just see one desperate situation after another in the Stellantis world, but that's just me.
Yeah, that is you.
I don't know.
Let's go to the slate. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the topic of the slate, which we've discussed in a couple of previous versions of this show. One of the things that is happening as the slate is trying to get to market is that the price has already jumped for the minimum intended minimum price of under $20,000 before you started having to add options. It's now more like $25,000. And the problem with this is I understand that the a couple of manufacturers, and I'll state, because I think I saw the name, is Toyota, one of them, are trying to bring forth a new smaller pickup truck in the $30,000 and under price range. Albeit maybe they will be fossil fueled, or that is gasoline engine versions of this and not electrified. But as Slate prepares to make its debut into our American market, and it is very appealing when you read this, when you read the stories about what it's going to be, and they're trying to get $50 or $100 deposits from people, and they want to build $150,000 a year. Could the Slate be, Jay, this is for your comment, too little, too late type of situation?
No, I don't think. I don't think so. I don't think so at all. But the concept is going to evolve. So, you know, we remember when Tesla was going to come out with a $30,000 Model 3, and it ended up being, you know, $40,000 when it came out. But yeah, it happens now. But that's another story. I think this. I mean, I haven't followed the latest news on Slate. But you know, for little trucklets, I wish we'd get the Suzuki Samurai back, which I saw.
Oh, so one.
I saw a new one in Europe just last week or the week before when I was there, and it looks very much like the original one. You really have to look at it closely. It is hardly any larger, so it's a very, very compact little SUV. It looks as boxy as the original, and yet it's a totally modern vehicle. And I just wish we'd see this on our side of the pond. So yeah, I think there's a market for you know, cool little electric trucks or SUVs. Short answer.
Well, Slate has appeared in the September-October version of Car and Driver with a very long and detailed article on the Slate, and along with probably, I haven't read it word by word, but it's just, you know, they keep getting delays here and delays there, and every time there's a delay, the price has an option to change a little bit from what the headline says. That's a totally ridiculous, I think, optional suggestion about what the Slate is all about. I just think that, you know, we've talked about the Slate, Jay, and you've looked at the you've looked at it in depth, I think, more than I have. The question is, you know, Ford's got the Maverick, right, which comes as a hybrid version at its basic powertrain. And I think it was and may still be just under the $30,000 availability situation if you can find one with nothing, no options. Will this slate at $25,000 sell better than a Ford Maverick with a combination of a hybrid powertrain, which I think is more practical still as we move towards the electric world of cars? And people are still sort of not necessarily going towards full electric yet in numbers that make a lot of sense.
Well, the slate is not yet out. It's going to take another couple of years. So things are going to change between now and then. And I look forward to seeing it. And, you know, there's always room for another vehicle, I think. So,
okay. Anything major about the goings on at Lime Rock of the weekend that is about to end as we are doing this show?
I just saw a very nice early 70s Cadillac Eldorado turn in front of me. And it was just like, it's like a throwback in time. And it's just very cool. Just nice old cars. I
agree. Some of the old designs are really, you know, you hark back to those days of those designs. Square, of course, they were boat size in many cases when you're talking about the 80s and 70s. Versions of cars, right? When did the size start diminishing?
1977. Remember, 76 was the last of the long hoods and long tails. Yes, and then 77, everybody chopped their cars. Like GM chopped the Chevy Caprices, and Ford chopped their LTDs or whatever they were called, Country Squire. Yeah.
And the Continentals that were huge boats and disappeared and all that. But boy, when you see them today, it does, for those of us who are old enough to have been back in that earlier era, it is really a wonderful memory enhancing thing to have happen.
The biggest trend, I think, is if you compare, you know, when we were younger, like in the 60s or 70s, I'm not going to say there were only, but either the car market was basically European manufacturers and American manufacturers, and American manufacturers had cars that were way bigger than I'd say average, and the European cars were just so small. And it's interesting when you see them now, you know, side by side, the old cars, it's like, the European cars are so small. The little Fiats, the little Mini Morses, the little Triumphs, MGs are so small cars. And we had, in those days here, we had, you know, big boats. And now it's like all the cars, you know, if you look at what GM produces, Ford produces, or the European manufacturers, all those cars are just pretty much the same size, you know, within a certain model range. Anyway, and so the cars have become a lot more all the same. But then again, there's a Pagani here on the Midway, and, you know, a Pagani is a multi-million-dollar car. It is a work of art. It's a sports car, what they call a hypercar. It's not my type of car, even if I had all the money in the world, which I don't. But it's a work of art. It's cool. So yeah, a lot going on here, but a lot of stories. Met a shop owner that has a shop just in Lakeville that preps Porsches, and I knew of the name, but I'd never met the gentleman. And very nice guy. And builds old Porsches, or rebuilds old Porsches.
Well, you've mentioned this particular place a couple of times earlier in earlier shows as well. So you have not been to his shop, though, right?
I have not, but I certainly will in the very foreseeable future.
He's got pretty good business, I understand, from my limited knowledge of his presence in our area.
Yep.
And it's interesting. Our Northwest Connecticut corner's got very good service garages, wouldn't you say? And then you have specialists like this Porsche guy, and who's tucked away and down a little side street. With, I don't think there's any signage on the street off the main street to get down there.
And certainly doesn't need it.
He doesn't need it. Yep. So it all makes this area that we do our recording and the show in a very sort of specialized place to be living in, driving in. And I guess we could bring up, as we get towards the end of this show, the fact that there's been a lot of repaving going on. You brought it up, I think, in an earlier show around our corner. And the interesting thing I'm watching is what happens when the newly paved area meets the area that may have been paved 2 or 3 years ago, but they're not going to continue putting the new paving onto recently paved old area. You can really tell the difference, drivers, when the tire noise that you get in your car changes as you go from a newly paved road where it might be much more quiet and less noticeable. And you drive onto a road that is 2 years worn down, 2 years, 2 to 3 years down, and the noise picks up as the roughness of the pavement is starting to appear, as the surface slowly erodes, I guess, or loses its new smooth luster.
Yeah, and I find myself accelerating and picking up speed when I'm on new pavement.
Absolutely. And then you hit the old pavement and the friction increases between the tires and the road, and you slow down where you might have been going downhill and speeding up. Any more things?
Yeah, a little safety tip.
Yes.
Trying to think of something.
While you're thinking, I'm going to just say, get back to the old bicycles on the road situation. I'm over here in my Massachusetts summer place, and the people are out bicycling, and we are mostly two-lane roads. And some of them are two-lane of older width design than the newer two-lane roads. And we have lots of trees draping over these roads. And let me tell you, when the sun is out or when you see a road lined with trees, it gets a lot darker. And unless the bicyclists have their blinking lights on, and not all of them have them on in the front, most of them have them on in the back, they are very difficult to see, drivers. And I know it happens around our northwest corner as well. We've got a lot of bicyclists going around there, too, in the summer months and into the fall. And
speaking of lights, let's, school buses are back on the road. So
they are indeed.
Beware of that.
And don't pass them. We're getting school buses with cameras on those side markers that go out. But I know a lot of towns in Connecticut have got cameras now that are designed to capture people who break the law and pass a school bus that is either stopped or stopping to pick up children or drop them off, depending on what time of day it is. Okay.
Enjoy the rest of summer.
Yes, enjoy the rest of the summer. Drive safely, and we will be on with another show very soon. This is Car Keys, Jay DeMarc and Robin Leach.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.